Okay, let's go ahead and get started. Tonight's topic is keeping kids from gangs and the cartel. This is the fourth in our series of community parenting seminars. And if you want to catch any of the others, they're available online. Okay, I'm Steve Nelson, and I won't do a real long introduction today. That's my wonderful family. We have 8 kids, 4 boys, 4 girls. And I've done a little bit of teaching in the public school, and I just have a heart to make a difference in families. So, tonight we're talking about keeping your kids from gangs and the cartel. And this could be a topic that I think people maybe don't realize that is really an issue in their family, or they don't think that they're susceptible to it at all. And so I think it's an important topic. Obviously, here living on the border, we know that there's a lot of cartel violence and stuff. We've had thousands of murders every year for the last several years. And so we understand that that's kind of a part of the society we live in. I know growing up, I always kind of felt like gangs and stuff was something that was, you know, like, just almost like a different world. Like, it's often inner city New York or Chicago or somewhere else, but certainly not in Council Bluffs, Iowa. And growing up, it seems like it was kind of kept off to certain cities, but now it's spread all over. Here's a map of just the Mexican drug cartels in the United States, and you can see that they've spread all over the place. So really, I think my advice for tonight is you should all move to North Dakota or maybe Maine. But you can see down here where we live, there's quite a bit of activity, and that's obvious to all of us just from reading the newspaper and stuff. But I think a lot of parents don't think it's really something that they need to worry about. It's not going to affect their family. You know, we think, well, we're good people, we're church-going and stuff like that. And so we don't realize that our kids actually have a danger of getting involved in something like this. Youth are a target for gangs and the cartel. This is from a Florida gang education website. They said recruitment into the gang usually starts in middle school, where the age group is between 10 and 13. And so the gang recruitment isn't just something, you know, don't just think 18, 19-year-olds, but little kids. And when I taught at Terrace Hills Middle School, there was talk of some of the kids being in gangs, or kids would come, you know, I'm sore, and they would say that they had just gotten jumped into a gang or jumped out of a gang. And it's really hard to know when they're teasing and stuff, because they were secretive about it. Whenever I talked to them about it, they would always be like, oh, I'm just messing with you and stuff like that. But I tend to think that some of it was serious and that some of them were involved in gangs. And at that level, you know, they may not be involved in super serious stuff, but they're going down a path, kind of like the point of no return from last week, the slippery slope. And they're started down a path in their life that can really have an impact on them. This is from NPR interview, and there's going to be several different quotes from this website. It says some 80% of the victims are younger than 25. This is talking about the violence in Juarez. Social workers say the violence is fueled by a disturbing trend. The cartels have begun seeking younger and younger recruits. And so whenever we hear the statistics or the numbers from Juarez and all the deaths that are happening over there and the beheadings and all that stuff, the drive-by shootings, I don't know, I tend to think kind of, you know, 30-year-old people or something, or people in their 20s. And most of it, 80% of them are just kids, you know, just high school kids or just maybe a little bit past that age. And so it's a real disturbing thing that when you hear, you know, oh, over the weekend, 15 people got killed. Well, most of those 15 people were 25 and younger. And so it really affects kids a lot. And so just even those numbers, you know, when you hear of, you know, 1,000 people dying in a year, well, that's 800 of them are youths. And so it's just massive amounts of children that are getting pulled into this. The youth are targeted by gangs and the cartel for good reasons. First of all, they're easily recruited. They're just more gullible. They don't necessarily have a pattern set in life yet. You know, like if somebody tried to recruit me, I have stuff to lose. It's like, well, I have my job, I have my family, I have relationships, I have all this stuff going for me that I would have to balance and weigh out, and I wouldn't necessarily want to give up. Whereas with youth, they don't maybe have a lot going for them, so they're more easily recruited. Their conscience is not fully formed. And so as you age, your mind goes through different stages of development. So like even as a kid, I remember when I was a real little kid, I loved to go on roller coasters and stuff. And it was just totally fearless because, well, just because I couldn't consciously think through all the dangers and that sort of thing. And so roller coasters were a real blast. And then I remember things kind of shifting. And for a while, roller coasters were really scary. And maybe I would still go on them, but I'd have to kind of build up the courage. And you know, because then you're starting to get old enough that you start to realize, hey, this is scary. I'm up high, or we're going fast, or we're going upside down, or things like that. And then as I got older than that, then it's like, okay, I could understand the dangers, but I could also understand the mechanics and the safety and become less fearful again, because it's like, well, you know, what are the odds of anything happening to me? And this is pretty safe, and they have all these safety features. And so in a similar way, our conscience goes through different phases, and you may have noticed that with your own kids, that there'll be times when, you know, your kids just seem to not quite get that they've done something wrong, or they'll go through a phase where they're just apologizing all the time, and you can tell that developmentally things are going on. Well, for kids, for like those 13-year-olds, they may not fully understand what they're involved in. They may not fully understand the consequences of what happens. For example, let's say they shoot somebody. Well, to them, it's just like the movies or something, you know. Well, I just shot somebody and now they're dead. You know, they don't necessarily think through, oh, that person has a family and friends and all those people are affected and lives are affected and their kids are affected. They don't think through all this stuff because they're just kids and they don't process things in that way. They don't process through all the consequences of their actions. And so to them, it can just be almost a game. It can be real heartless, and they aren't as impacted by their actions as perhaps an adult would be. So this is from that same NPR report. Sicaritos are children who are assassins, 13 or 14 years old, says Soto. We're going to hear from Soto again. He's 18, an inmate at the School of Social Betterment for Minors. The cartel has given him a weapon to use. It's easier for a boy. If he's older, he thinks too much. He may think about the consequences. But when you're young, you think you can take on the world. And so you can kind of picture that some 13-year-old kid, you give him a gun, and they just, you know, it's just a game. It doesn't necessarily have all these consequences. And I'm not saying that they shouldn't be held accountable for what they do. I'm just saying there is some extent to which they are not going to be looking into the future and the impact of what they do as much as somebody who's older. And so they would be great targets for the cartel. Kids tend to be a little more glory-driven or into things for the thrill of it. And you can see this example of somebody kayaking off of a waterfall. Or if you ever go to the skate park and you see kids skating and just doing some of the crazy stuff they do, and you'd see that, you know, they just love the thrill of the moment. And that's something that youth are really driven by. And so even if you just compare, like if we go to the 13-year-old, compare sitting in boring Mr. Nelson's science class versus having a gun and shooting people. You know, well, that's quite a difference. And so they see all the clothes and the music and the excitement of the cartel, and that can be something that's a real pull for them at that age, because at that age they're into the thrill of it all. So like for us, as we get older and stuff, we start to lose some of that. You know, there becomes a point where you think, wow, it'd be really thrilling to go over the waterfall, but then there's a point where it's like, yeah, but who wants to deal with the broken nose for the next 6 weeks? Or, you know, you start to weigh out stuff like that, and as you get older, you're like, you know, the thrill's not really worth it. Whereas with a kid, it just doesn't matter to them. They love the glory. They love doing something really thrilling. Kids are expendable. So if you think of a gang or a cartel as being a business, which it is, they're a multi-million dollar business. And just like any other business, they have people with different strengths and weaknesses. And so you can imagine at the head of this business, maybe they have somebody who's a fairly gifted individual, maybe in a lot of different areas, maybe somewhat charismatic, maybe people are drawn to them pretty easily. Maybe he has somebody else that's really good with the finances and the business side of things, and somebody else who might be really good with international drug contacts, and somebody else who's really good at recruiting, and somebody else who's really good with training people, and somebody else who's really good at surveillance. And you have people who are good at different things. And some of them have been doing this their whole lives. Now, you have a job to do. You need somebody to take some drugs across the border. And there's a chance that they're going to get caught. So do you want to take this guy with 20 years of experience in finances and have him be the guy that carries the drugs across? Or do you want to give $500 to some high school kid who's going to take the drugs across for you? And so the kids are expendable like that, where, well, if they get caught, really you're just out the drug money. And losing that kid to prison or even losing his life isn't that much of a cost compared to losing somebody who's kind of important to your business. Like when I worked at Woodward Governor as a computer programmer, we would go on business trips sometimes. And because we had this huge project that was going on and changing all the computers out and stuff, sometimes a lot of people would go on a business trip and we would all go to headquarters. And sometimes there'd be 15 or 20 people going at once. And so what the company would do is they would make sure all the important people weren't on the same plane. Because they realized that, okay, if we lose 20 of our best people, and it's probably only the top six or so that they really cared about, but if we lose all six of these people at once, our company's going to go down. Because we're not going to be able to replace these skills. It's going to be too hard. And so they would split us up because they're just kind of counting the costs. And so in the same way, or in a similar way, with the drug cartel, you know, why use their best people to do the most dangerous jobs? Why not get somebody else who will do it for you for money? The kids have limited options. They aren't maybe super well educated. They aren't prepared for life. And so it becomes a viable alternative for them to perhaps get involved in the drug cartel. You know, even as a teacher, just to be honest, sometimes I'd stand in class and I'd look at some of the kids and be like, okay, you know, the way things are going for you academically, you can have a minimum wage job the rest of your life, or you can join the military, or you can get into the drug cartel. I mean, it's just, you just watch them, it's like, I just don't know what else you could do. And that's the way it is with some of these kids, is they have limited options, and then you start weighing those out. If they don't want to do military, okay, now I'm left to minimum wage or this other job where I can make a whole bunch of money really quick. And they might think, you know, well, I'll just do this for a year. But they get sucked into it. Those children of the barrio are raised by siblings or on the streets, and they're ill-suited to repetitive work in the factories. In other words, they have no skills or classroom study. So not only don't they have skills, but there's not much hope of them getting skills. And I thought this was pretty shocking. And whereas one out of three kids doesn't go to middle school, and attendance in high school is half of the national average. I assume that's the Mexican national average, but I'm not sure, though. But one out of three kids doesn't go to middle school. So how does that work for a kid? You know, can you imagine that? Where one-third of the kids in society didn't make it through middle school. They're not just high school dropouts, but they're middle school dropouts. And so, or maybe even dropped out before that. So how are they going to compete in the world? How are they going to make money? Well, not legally, probably. And so it's really quite a crisis for those kids. So let's think through which youth are targeted. The first is kids from broken homes. And broken could be broken in a number of different ways. If parents are divorced, if there have been multiple marriages, kids from mixed marriages, abuse of any kind, all those things would be risk factors that would increase the chance that a kid would be able to be pulled into the cartel. Soto, the guy that we heard from before, he said, if you don't have a mother or father, no one to believe in you, then it's easy to fall into this, to be a delinquent. And I thought that was pretty profound. So it's kind of like saying, you know, if your mom doesn't care about you and your dad doesn't care about you, then what's the matter? Why should I care about myself? And He's saying it's just easy to fall into this lifestyle because nobody cares. And so broken homes are a huge risk factor for people to get involved in the cartel. Kids with little parental supervision. And this is hard. This is hard when a lot of parents, both parents are working jobs, and kids are left home alone. I think I mentioned last week how a couple summers ago I went out and went to the parks and just talked to kids about their beliefs, talked to kids and adults, but there were a lot of kids that were at the park, and I could just go to the park and drive around, and I would find a 13-year-old, 14-year-old, sometimes 10-year-olds just there at the park all by themselves. And I could go up and walk up to them and say, hey, how's it going? And I could start talking to them and have a conversation, maybe talk to them for 20 or 30 minutes, and nobody noticed, nobody questioned me, nobody ever walked up and said, hey, what are you doing? What are you doing walking around talking to kids? And it's just kind of scary that these kids are just left to wander around the park and nobody's watching it. You know, nobody's supervising these kids. And I'm sure the parents just thought, you know, well, they're safe and they're with their friend and they'll be all right and they have their cell phone and they can call me if they get trouble, and they think through stuff like that. But still, they don't necessarily think through just how they can start down that slippery slope, how they can start down this path of doing wrong things. And so, you know, just in your own life, you can think through, think about the first time you had alcohol. Where were you and where were your parents? And think about the first time you smoked. Where were you and where were your parents? If you ever tried pot, where were you and where were your parents? And so all these things, we start down a path, and typically that path that we start down is without our parents. And so like these kids at the park, most of the time they're probably not doing anything. They're just skateboarding, they're hanging out. But on some of those times, someone's going to bring alcohol, someone's going to have pot, and they're going to start down a path. And all the serious drug stuff starts off with minor stuff. So the people that get into the hardcore drugs, they start off with pot, and they probably start off with drinking before that. And all these things are tied together. And so the kids that have little parental supervision are going to be really prime targets for the gangs and cartels. Kids who don't get along with their parents and or step-parents. Okay, so if there's some kind of a split in the family, then what happens is the kids want to have that family. They want to belong. And we'll talk about that a little bit more, but particularly, again, if there's abuse or fighting going on in the home, then those kids are targets. Which youth are targeted? Maybe even your kids. And again, I think it's important just to remember that it's not just, you know, like when I was a kid, you just thought, well, it's those, you know, people in New York. It's the people, the inner city, ghetto kids, and bless you. It's not just, you know, kids over in Juarez. It's not just kids over on the east side. So this young man here is the son of a man who was one of my church leaders when I went to college. And he was involved in some gang activity, involved in some drugs, and he ended up shooting a guy that he got into a fight with and killed him in kind of a drive-by shooting type of situation. And so I knew his parents. His parents were, you know, just the sweetest people in the world. They were very kind-hearted, compassionate, loving. I guess I wasn't around them much during their parenting years, but I wouldn't expect this kind of result from the kind of parents that they were. And so I think it's good just, again, to kind of take inventory of our lives and not think, oh, this could never happen to me. I don't think it's terribly hard to protect your kids from the gangs and the cartels. I think if we're alert and we do a decent job as parents, I think we can, but I think it would be a huge mistake to say, you know, well, we're not really those type of parents. Our kids don't have these dangers, because they do. So how are youth recruited? This is going to be important to understand so that we can equip our kids and protect them. Obviously, peer pressure is a big deal. So it's just hard when there's a flow of kids going in one direction. So if all your friends join up with the cartel, it would be hard to stand strong and say, well, I'm not going to go that direction. And peer pressure is something that affects kids. And I think it's easy to think that it's kind of a little kid type of thing, but peer pressure is really something that impacts us all, even as adults. If we were involved in a social group where everybody drove really nice cars, we would feel really insecure if we didn't have a really nice car. There's peer pressure that impacts us. If everybody dressed a particular way, we would want to dress that way. If everybody was super fit, we would all feel this pressure to be super fit. And that's just the way it is. And so for these kids, when they are involved in a group of friends that starts going down this path, it's really easy for them to get pulled down that path as well. Enticing benefits. So there are a lot of different benefits that can draw kids into the cartel. When they're starting off, it might be something just really small, like cigarettes or jewelry or electronic equipment or things like that. But then later on, there's money, there's guns, there's more money, there's parties, there's, you know, and these are all things that the cartel promises. And at some point, it becomes enticing, you know? The pile of money there is money, obviously, that they've confiscated from the cartel. And it's like, well, that's a lot of money. Even if those are all ones, that's a lot of money. And I would guess they're probably 20s and 50s. And so it's not just empty promises, but they really do have a huge amount of benefits that they have to decide against. And so they need to be pretty strong to be able to fight against that pressure. There's an article, I don't have it up on your screen, but they were saying that for one drug run, and it's not around here, so I'm not familiar with the cities, but on one drug run between these cities, they were offering $1,500. And so you can imagine living over in Juarez, being a kid who didn't go to middle school, and someone offers you $1,500 for something that's going to take you half a day. Or I don't know, maybe if you had to do all the packing and welding and whatever you need to do to hide the drugs, maybe it would take you a couple days or something. Well, that's pretty enticing. When your other option is to work at McDonald's or do some other real low-paying job. And so these benefits are really a draw. And you can see where a kid would think, well, yeah, it's wrong, but I'll just do it for a year. I'll just do it for a little while. And I can make more in a year than I can make in 20 years doing a normal job. And so it's this huge pull that draws them in that direction. This is a big one, too, the promise of love and family. I couldn't find a good picture for this, but I assume there's kind of a brotherhood between these guys. But this plays in a lot to the gang mentality, because what happens is these kids, most of them are from broken homes, and they're wanting a place to belong. They want a place to fit in. And so the gang, the cartel, kind of promises this to them, that, you know, if you join up, then we've got your back, and we'll be for you, and we'll stick up for you. And you see that some in some of the violence, where one person does something really stupid, and then the other side comes and retaliates in revenge. And it's that mentality of, you know, we've got you, you hurt our guy, or you shot our guy, or something, and there's this retaliation going back and forth. And in a strange sort of way, it's this family atmosphere. And so we see that in the military. People go off to battle together, and there's a camaraderie. Like, the band of brothers captures that idea. When you go on a mission trip with somebody, you know, you have that camaraderie. And when you work closely with somebody, there's a camaraderie. And same thing in the cartel, there's a camaraderie. And this is a huge recruitment tool. This is something that's really a draw for youth. Lies and deception. So might just be the cartel saying, well, we're not really the drug cartel. We're just more of a club. You know, we're just a bunch of people that look out for each other. And again, don't always think of this recruiter being this 30-year-old guy recruiting this 15-year-old kid. It's probably some 16-year-old kid recruiting the 15-year-old kid. And the 16-year-old kid may not even understand what he's involved in completely. just like, hey, come on, you know, we're going to get a bunch of money if we do this thing. And, you know, no, it's not the cartel. It's just, you know, it's just these guys, and we all look out for each other, and we just have some ways to make a lot of money. And you can get pulled into something without really fully understanding what you're getting into. Fear and intimidation. I don't know that this has been used a lot with the youth, but obviously, like with the police, when they try to get them involved, you know, there's a very strong recruitment method of you're either with us or you're against us, and if you're not going to be with us, then we're going to kill you or kill your family, and they're quite serious about that. And then this is important to understand. How are youth kept in gangs? One way is through debt or some kind of obligation. And this would maybe particularly be true of kids that are on drugs. And so they're on drugs, they form a habit, they're addicted, and they need more and they need more. And so they always need to be getting money. They always need the gang, they always need the cartel to be able to provide them with drugs and provide them with jobs that they can get money. And so they have this ongoing debt. And then there's also a threat of turning them in. So let's take that example of the kid doing a drug run, and he gets paid $1,500 to take some marijuana from Mexico over to the U.S. And so for a 16-year-old kid, you know, that's looking pretty good. Well, then the next job comes along, and they say, hey, we want you to do this drug run, and you're going to do the same thing. We'll give you $500. It's like, well, what do you mean? I got $1,500 last time. Or maybe I decided that's not for me. Well, now it's in a sense, it's too late. Because it's like, well, you've taken this step, now we got you. And now we can turn you in for what you did last time. Now you know what? Now you're in, and you could turn us in, so we're not going to let you just walk away from this. And so if you don't do what we want you to do, then we're going to hurt you, or we're going to hurt your friends, or we're going to hurt your family. And that's, of course, what's going on over in Juarez all the time. That's why there'll be a party going on, and all of a sudden the whole party gets shot up. Well, it's not just that they were after one person at the party, but sometimes it's just they want to teach people a lesson. So the next time they tell somebody, hey, you need to do this or else, they'll take them real seriously, and I would assume that they do. Okay, so as parents, what can we do to make a difference? These are some tough challenges, and the enticement that these kids have is something that's really going to be a challenge to overcome. And so as parents, we need to be really careful to, first of all, just give them a safe, loving, and stable home. And a safe home doesn't mean just safe from outside violence, but just even a home where they feel safe and secure, a home where they know that they can come home and they're not going to get yelled at, or they're not going to get hit, they're not going to get abused. It's loving, where the parents care about them and take interest in them. They're not just dropped off at the park or left to be watched by somebody else all the time. Or, I think about when our church sometimes would meet at Madeline Park, and there'd be a little girl that was there, and she just wandered the park all the time. And just, you know, I don't know what's going on, but she doesn't have a safe, loving, and stable home. And she is vulnerable for probably a lot of different things that could go wrong in her life. Stable. I think it's good that kids can go into a home and they know it's like, it's going to be the same way that it was yesterday and the day before and the day before and the day before. Not, I'm coming home and, I hope Dad hasn't been out drinking and, you know, now he's going to be violent or my dad left again tonight and Mom and Dad are in a fight. You know, that's unstable. And so as parents, these are things that we do, and sometimes we think that some of this stuff just relates to our marriage, and so we can feel like, you know, well, our marriage is just kind of us. It's me and my spouse, and we're just trying to get by, and we're trying to make things work, but sometimes we fight, and sometimes we quarrel, and you think it doesn't really have that much impact on the kids, but it has a huge impact. And so these kids that are from these broken homes are from very unstable environments, And I'm sure that the parents in those situations would still say that they love their kids. But they're not providing their kids with what they need to keep them safe. We need to teach them that it always pays to do right. And that's a really big deal. It's interesting. Most movies and books still have a moral theme to them. Seems like in most media, the good guy still wins in the end, and the bad guy still gets it. And so that's a good thing, but that's not enough. It's not like, you know, well, we watched Lord of the Rings, and the good guy won in the end. You know, it has to be more than that. The kids really have to grasp that there's a right and a wrong, and that their choices make a difference. Because when the kids go down these paths, they have these just huge decisions to make. Remember when we first moved here to El Paso, it was probably within that first 6 months, there was an article in the newspaper of a kid, I don't remember exactly, he's probably 18, he was high school age, or maybe 19 at the oldest. And he had just been busted involved in drug trafficking. And, you know, he's like a year out of high school or in high school, and he had made like $1 million, literally. Might even been like $1.5 million. It was just this huge amount of money. And he was getting sent to prison for 6 years. And I'm sitting there doing math in my head. It's like, well, that was a pretty good job, you know. I don't know if he got to keep his million or not, but wow. You know, for a kid to not go down that path, for a kid to turn that down, would really take a lot of moral strength. You'd really have to understand, you know, I'm going down a course, and I'm going to stay on that course. And I was going to bring an article we had read out of Reader's Digest lately, but I forgot it. But this guy had written this article. He was a professor, I believe. And he was just talking about basically how to be happy in life. And one of his main points was that you don't fudge. You know, you set a course, and then you stay on that course, no matter what it costs you. And he would set principles in his life and then stay with them 100% of the time. And so there was no fudging. And he was saying, you know, in the course of his life, it had really paid off because he had watched friends of his who would maybe keep their principles 98% of the time, but that meant, you know, some of the time they're waffling on times that they should have stayed strong. And he gave an example of when he was in college, he played basketball, and it was, I think he was in England. So it wasn't with our, it wasn't here in the States, but it was kind of the equivalent of being in the Final Four. His team made it. And the finals were on a Sunday, and he had made a vow to God that he wasn't going to play on a Sunday. Now, I know that Eric Little did that, and I always kind of thought, we'll just play on Sunday, it's no big deal. But to him, it was really this core thing. And to him, it was a vow he had made, it was a standard that he had set in his life. And, of course, the coach tried to talk him out of it, and his teammates tried to talk him out of it, but he stood with it and he didn't play. And that's kind of cool. So our kids have to have that kind of strength that they say, you know what, I'm going to do what's right, even if my buddy makes this drug run and he makes $1,500 and I don't. And I'm going to do what's right, even if, you know, my buddy's making $1 million in a couple years' time and I'm still working at McDonald's. And those are hard choices to make. And then our kids need to understand that eventually our wrong choices catch up with us. And I think perhaps one of the most helpful things in this is just reading the newspaper with your kids, or if you find an article on the web about cartel violence, something like that, and say, hey, come here, I want you to read this. And help them think through that process, you know, say, hey, this kid got involved when he was 14. Why do you think he got involved? Okay, well, he wanted some quick money, didn't he? Okay, well, and look at him now. And if you search on Google Images on cartel violence, you could show them some pretty graphic things. So it would make them think, yeah, maybe I don't want to go down this path. Because it's just, you know, it's just brutal, the stuff that they do. And so, again, it's easy for them to start down this path and to think, well, it's not really hurting anybody. But once they start, it's really hard to get out. And so we need to teach our kids that it always pays to do right. And the wrong things they do will eventually catch up with them. And then lastly, help them find a place to fit in. Peer pressure is so strong. And I think we all want to be loved and accepted. We all want to fit in somewhere. Doesn't even really matter where so much, but that we fit in somewhere. And, you know, I don't know, just some of these pictures up here. I think of the movie Searching for Bobby Fischer. I'm like, here's this little geeky kid. You know, I don't know that he's going to fit in unless he changes a lot over the next few years. I don't know that he's going to fit in with the football guys. But could he fit in the chess club? Or, you know, maybe this kid, maybe he's athletically just terrible. Maybe he's just clumsy as can be, but he's really smart. And maybe he can really fit in with the smart kids. Or athletics, or dancing, or music, or whatever. And I think our kids need a place where they can kind of fit in and excel and belong. And that could be at church. That could be in sports. That could be in a number of different things. But it needs to be somewhere. And if our kids are in life and they don't have a place that they fit in, just the way humans are, most of us will seek that out and we'll look for that. And if we don't give them a right place to live that out, they'll find a wrong place to live that out. And so that could be in gangs in the cartel. It could be in promiscuity. It could be in different things. But our kids need to have a place where they can excel, where people like them, where they have friends that are kind of similar-minded. And so those are some things you can do to help your kids. And, of course, if you guys ever have any questions, feel free to contact us. And you're welcome to join us at church for our series called High Voltage, 10 o'clock on Sunday mornings.